Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
Every day, discoveries and inventions are continually made. A new extrasolar planet. A new super strong material. A particle that appears to travel faster than the speed of light. A new species in a lake hidden under the Antarctic ice cap. These are the fruits of our ongoing quest to understand the universe around us. Yet, the scientists and inventors who toil to extend their knowledge have no control over how their discoveries are ultimately used. In this month's story, a scientist makes a world-changing discovery, only to find out that there are those who are very concerned about its potential dark side. We invite you to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 51, Quantum Turbulence. Somewhere in some time, we might be forced to make a choice between a new technology and preserving the imperfect world that we already have. DPEN had first come across the idea in an old NASA research report on a missionless aircraft. By his time, some 60 years after the paper was released, it had been well mined for ideas. Many had even made it into production, such as the fuel cells that powered the new aircraft now plying the skies of the subcontinent. But not every idea in the report had been so thoroughly explored. Buried in the middle was one concept that even the original authors had warned was highly unlikely. And as far as DPEN knew, no one with even a modest reputation to keep intact had been willing to touch the concept. Energy from apparently nowhere. The idea of generating limitless energy from virtually nothing had been too tainted by the pseudoscience of the last century for the contemporary research community to take it seriously. But there was, DPEN knew, however tenuous, some truth to the claims. He knew that in quantum mechanics, the apparent emptiness of a vacuum was really not empty at all. Particles mysteriously manifested and disappeared all the time. In the past, it had been theorized that a vacuum contained incredible amounts of energy, even at absolute zero, hence the name, zero-point energy. There is even some experimental evidence for this, but there is one big problem. Because ZPE was entirely random, it cancelled itself out, so in practical terms, it didn't exist. But zero-point energy was exactly what DPEN had been looking for. India had grown so much in the last decades that the government was committed to finding new sources of energy. The country was determined to free itself from its dependency on the rapidly dwindling, ever more expensive hydrocarbons it imported from the Arctic oil barons, who in the last several decades had grown insanely rich on the rest of the world's need. DPEN knew that ZPE was an incredible long shot, but there were no other competing research projects, and the government was desperate, throwing money at almost anything that hinted of a solution. So when DPEN had presented his idea to the Research Council in New Delhi, they had instantly leapt at it. Now, their mutual gamble was about to pay off and change the world. But not until DPEN had completed his current trip. The flight crew had just finished their safety demonstration as the plane began to be pushed away from the gate, when the motion came to an unexpected stop. The captain came on the intercom.
Good morning, this is your captain speaking. I've been ordered back to the gate to pick up a last-minute passenger. We apologize for this brief delay. It shouldn't take more than 5 minutes. The winds along our planned route today are at the moment favorable, so we should be able to make up the time in flight and still be at the gate in Gandhi International Airport at 11:35 a.m. To help keep this delay to a minimum, we would ask that you remain in your seat with your seatbelts on.
The speakers in the ceiling abruptly cracked off, and a low murmur of protest resonated through the cabin. DPEN felt the plane move forward for a moment, then jerk to a stop. There were dull thumps as the ramp reconnected with the plane, followed by a few metallic clicks as the door was opened by the flight crew. A quick but intense exchange between an unseen figure and the steward resulted in the latter laughing and gesturing for the rather late passenger to enter. Then, an excited-looking older man with a thick, bushy mustache burst into the cabin. Irritated by the inconsiderate delay that this man had caused, all the passengers stared at him. However, the new arrival seemed oblivious to the daggers in their eyes. DPEN critically assessed the new passenger, wondering who he was to be able to get a plane to come back to the gate to pick him up. but there was nothing about his appearance that indicated he had any stature. If anything, the man looked to Deepan like some type of aging actor who had played the role of a mad scientist far too many times. His hair was a bit wild, frizzing out like it was full of static, revealing a receding hairline. His mustache, in the same shade of gray as his hair, almost covered his top lip. Deepan thought his nose a bit bulbous, even for a European, and his suit looked distinctly out of date. Yet the man seemed to exude excitement and intelligence. Laugh lines radiated away from his intense brown eyes, which darted around the cabin looking for his seat. Deepan was sure the steward would escort this odd man out of business class, but to Deepan's surprise and disappointment, the old man walked confidently to the empty seat beside him and sat down with a sigh. The steward quickly rushed up, Deepan's hopes rising that the stranger had taken the wrong seat, only to be squashed when the steward reached over to check the man's seatbelt, then ran off to confirm that everyone else in business class was still strapped in. Deepan felt the plane begin to move back again as the engines anxiously started their high-pitched whine. The old man leaned over to him, pointing to an antique-looking watch on his wrist, and said in English with a thick Middle European accent that Deepan could not place, "Did you know that Dubai is 4+ hours Greenwich Mean Time? I set my watch there." He tapped on the device's fragile-looking crystal to help get his meaning across. "On the other hand, Dubai is 5.5 hours plus Greenwich Mean Time. Only one time zone in between, so how is one supposed to know about the extra half hour that India adds? Told the gate attendant that. Must have been convincing. They agreed with me and called the plane back. Very nice of them, don't you think? To admit how things should be standardized. After all, why should some countries use time offsets and others not? Crazy stuff, this. It's hard to keep track of. Very confusing. Especially when you travel a lot like me. Time is everything." Deepan pretended not to hear the old European, wishing that this weird person would leave him alone, but in the pit of his stomach he suspected that the universe was not going to grant him the gift of a peaceful flight. Undaunted, the man tried again in perfect Hindi. "Sir, you appear to be a bit nervous. Are you afraid of flying? There's nothing to it, really. It's very safe."
"No."
Deepan shot back, a little too loudly as the engines revved for takeoff, preventing any further unwanted conversation. Deepan had been working toward this moment for more than 20 years. Much of that time he had been shunned, or even outright ridiculed by his colleagues, who viewed his research into zero-point energy as, at best, a pathetic sign of the extent of the government's desperation to solve the energy crisis, and at worst, a foolish waste of time. But Deepan had ignored them all, obsessively following his hunch until it had paid off. Although driven by passion, he was a very practical person, and before Deepan could smugly announce his discovery, to the embarrassment of his detractors, a moment he would relish, he needed to do one very important thing. The greatest part of his breakthrough had been that it was mind-bogglingly simple once you understood the principles. Anyone with access to a bit of basic equipment and a computer could reproduce it. So his work would be quickly confirmed, and that, ironically, was also the problem. Once Deepan had realized this, instead of writing a paper on his research, he told no one and prepared a patent application. Now, he was on this flight to New Delhi to hand-deliver it. He had decided that there was no way he was going to submit the application online, where prying eyes might find it and steal his work.
"Excuse me," the old man said, in his irritating accented English, after the plane had reached its cruising altitude and the engines throttled back. "Are you flying to New Delhi on business or pleasure?"
"Business,"
Deepan tersely replied. The old man went on. "I would like to visit that city at my leisure sometime. But I too have urgent business to conduct."
"I didn't say it was urgent,"
Deepan snarled back. "Oh, I had assumed that by your demeanor. I don't mean to pry."
"You most certainly do," Deepan wanted to say. Instead, he attempted to end the conversation before it got started.
"It's important, not urgent. As you guessed, I don't like flying, especially on these new fuel cell planes. In my opinion, they were not thoroughly tested and rushed into production. That makes me nervous. Now, sir, if you don't mind, I would like to try and catch some sleep.
Ignoring Deepan, the man continued.
Yes, indeed they were, especially in India. On the other hand, fuel cells have been around for quite some time now and have proven very reliable. Even Europe and North America, which usually lag far behind on such things, are trying to get their own versions of the new system into production. They worry that they cannot compete with the aerospace industry here on the subcontinent unless they do.
Deepan turned his back to the old man, trying to make it obvious that he intended to go to sleep, then muttered,
Look, jet fuel was bad enough. It's the compressed hydrogen in the tanks these days. It makes me think of the Hindenburg, that's all. Just a silly phobia, really. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm very tired.
At that moment, the plane was rocked by turbulence, making Deepan instinctively clutch at his armrests.
Well,
the stranger reached over and collegially nudged Deepan on his shoulder.
There really isn't a choice, is there? Unless we all revert to horse and buggy. China, India, and Brazil alone could consume all of the world's oil production. And I think you would agree with me that the Canadian Arctic oil barons are already too powerful for the rest of us to depend on their good grace.
Deepan shrugged, wishing the turbulence would go away, realizing that for the moment he preferred the prying old man's annoying attempts at conversation to the increasing bucking of the aircraft. The fastened seatbelt light chimed on as the cabin speakers cracked to life again.
Good morning. This is your captain speaking. You'll notice that I've put the seatbelt lights back on. All passengers must now return to their seats, and cabin service has been suspended until further notice. The radar is showing several storms ahead. We will be climbing to avoid them, but reports from ground stations along our route now indicate that the rest of the trip will be a bit rough. We apologize for the added inconvenience.
As if to prove the pilot's point, the plane took an unexpected drop, making Deepan's stomach rise into his mouth and several other passengers audibly gasp. The plane's engines began to protest as the pilots, or more likely the flight computer, forced them to compensate, then began to climb. To distract himself, Deepan turned to the strange European and said in a trembling voice,
Suppose there is.
Suppose there is what?
The man replied, casually drawing his hands through his wild white hair.
Suppose there is a way to avoid carrying fuel at all.
The old man looked puzzled, but his interest had been obviously triggered. The plane lurched again, making Deepan nervously eye the wing outside the small porthole, watching it vibrate in the rough air.
I don't like things that you think should be stiff, acting like a piece of rubber.
Deepan complained, motioning toward the window.
Makes me wonder what other parts on this flying fuel tank are doing the same thing.
Ignoring Deepan's growing anxiety, the older man attempted to steer the conversation back to the subject of potentially explosive fuels.
You know, I knew a little bit about physics in my time, even had a few ideas of my own. But as far as I'm aware, unless you can make a plane fly in water, there's no such thing as a non-volatile fuel. Unless it can burn or explode, it would be useless as an energy source. It wouldn't contain any energy at all.
Taking the bait and grateful for the distraction, Deepan replied with a nauseous groan.
Yes, but when you think about it, that's usually the way to frame the problem, isn't it? A relatively simple chemical reaction. You need to get some highly unstable molecule to rapidly oxidize. That's not much more sophisticated than rubbing two sticks together to make a fire. Makes one think that we really haven't progressed very far at all.
But I suppose there is still nuclear fission.
Reluctantly, Deepan responded in an unenthusiastic tone.
That is really only a minor difference in my opinion, and thousands of times more dangerous. Regardless, the shielding is too heavy to be practical for a plane. And besides, after the Tarapur power plant fiasco and that failed launch of a nuclear-powered rocket last year, no one in their right mind would want to see reactors cruising over their head. Even then,
Deepan added,
a reactor is really nothing more sophisticated than a hot water kettle, and no more efficient than an old steam engine.
The old man's head nodded thoughtfully.
Yes, I think we can both agree that nuclear fission has not lived up to its promise and has presented many substantial problems. There are those among us who still regret our inadvertent contributions to the nuclear era of the last century, and some of us even think that we should have worked harder to prevent it. But that knowledge was needed to get us here, don't you think?
He heaved his body in a great sigh as he continued.
Well, the pursuit of knowledge can be a business that is not without risk. The trick would seem to be knowing when the risk is too great. And in that regard, even now we have not always done very well. But enough of that. I see that you have spent some time thinking about this problem. Tell me more.
Deepan thought the man's comments, like the man himself, a bit odd. Who was the we he was referring to, Deepan wondered. Was it a general we, which included everyone? Or did the man mean a group he belonged to? Regardless, the conversation was drifting a bit too close to the clandestine purpose of his trip. Now, Deepan regretted that he had succumbed to his irrational fear of the newer planes and started this conversation, so he decided that he needed to change the subject.
I'm still amazed that you were able to convince the airline to come back to pick you up. You are either very important or very persuasive. There are not many who could make that happen. If it were me, I'd still be back in the airport wondering how I was going to get to Delhi.
You might say that I was very determined to be on this flight. It was vital that I speak to someone before they made a critical error in judgment.
Are you going to meet them in Delhi?
Deepan questioned, but the stranger appeared disinclined to answer and changed the subject back to powering airplanes.
So, what are the alternatives? For example, how would you power this aircraft?
The old man aggressively pressed Deepan for an answer.
I'm really very interested to know. Here you are, worried about winging through the heavens, laden with huge tanks of hydrogen, imagining the worst, having ancient pictures of the burning Hindenburg dog your mind. That event more or less ended lighter-than-air transport. But it was the hydrogen the ship was forced to use, not the airship itself, that caused the disaster. 1937 doesn't seem that long ago, at least to me. But that was more than 130 years in the past. And yet, ironically, we find ourselves in the sky in an aircraft with many thousands of cubic liters of that same volatile gas just a few centimeters below our feet.
The man appeared to Deepan to be intentionally playing to his deep-rooted fear. Almost on cue, the plane violently bucked and slewed, making Deepan feel trapped and desperate. He pressed his eyes closed and tried to shut the plane and the old man out, but it didn't work. The European determinedly pressed on.
What would you propose? Something much more exotic, I suspect.
He stopped for a moment, waiting for a response. Deepan hesitated, frantically searching through his mind for a way to put an end to this conversation, then decided on denial. After all, how could the stranger know why he was on the flight?
It's just my odd phobia. I was thinking out loud. I really don't have an answer.
Are you sure?
The man persisted.
I believe that you mentioned something about an alternative, which didn't require fuel at all.
Deepan turned away and looked out the window, trying to will this prying man to stop.
I believe you are mistaken, sir. I didn't say no fuel. I said an alternative to explosive fuels.
Look, I don't mean to be impolite, but I clearly remember you saying no fuel would be needed.
The man changed position in his seat so he could cross his legs, then continued.
To me, that sounds like energy from thin air. I suspect you know there has been a long history of claims like that. Alas, this is not my main area of expertise, but among my colleagues, there are those of us who are.
Again, there was a vague reference to a mysterious we. Becoming suspicious, Deepan demanded.
Sir, I must insist. Who are your colleagues? And for that matter, who are you?
The white-haired man, again ignoring Deepan's question, pushed on.
There have been many claims to inventing apparatus that can create free energy from nowhere. You know, perpetual motion machines, cold fusion and all that. But they were all just wishful fantasies. And you strike me as being more rational than that. Now, if you really could pull energy from nowhere, the only place I can think of is the zero-point field. I believe that it's called zero-point energy. There's even been some documented experimental evidence in this area. Normally, I'm not a betting man, but I'd wager that was what you were hinting at.
ZPE?
Terrified, Deepan involuntarily blurted out.
That is just pure nonsense. There is no way to pull energy out of a chaotic system, like the quantum foam of a vacuum. Even though some claim that a cup of the stuff contains enough energy to boil all the oceans in the world.
He lied, hoping the man didn't notice the uncertainty in his voice.
I see that you admit to some knowledge of it. Most people have never even heard of ZPE. Personally, I am very familiar with the work of one of the physicists that first proposed the zero-point field at the dawn of the 20th century. The man said with an air of confident smugness that made Deepan even more desperate to know who this stranger was. I believe that you know a lot more about the zero-point field and zero-point energy than you let on. I'd hazard a guess that you have spent a great deal of time studying it.
Deepan's stomach churned. He had a very bad feeling about this, but was determined not to admit anything.
I am aware of no more than any other academic. You know nothing of my work, or even what area of research I am pursuing, and I do not care to enlighten you, sir. Now, I have an important meeting after we land, and I need to get some rest, so please leave me alone.
Undaunted, the older man continued with his questions.
Did you not read a certain paper prepared for the old American agency called NASA half a century ago on a missionless flight?
Disbelief tore through Deepan, making his chest muscles painfully constrict. How could this stranger have known, he asked himself, then tried to quell his fear by reassuring his anxious mind that the report had been widely read. It was just a wild guess, he rationalized, but his patience had finally come to an end.
And who are you anyway? You be asking me such confidential questions?
He demanded loud enough for the passengers across the aisle to hear over the straining engines. Unfazed by Deepan, the older stranger replied in a controlled professional tone.
I represent a small private non-governmental group that takes an interest in specific matters from time to time, especially when they involve a theory that proposes a volume of empty space the size of a cup contains enough energy to boil all the world's oceans. And someone appears to have discovered a way to get at it. Naturally, we're interested in and concerned about discoveries like that.
So, what does that have to do with me? I know nothing of this ZPE.
Deepan defiantly shot back, wishing the conversation would end.
And even if I did, such a group as yours has no legitimacy here.
We are an international operation.
The man began, then reconsidered.
Actually, it might be better to describe us as extranational. We are not bound by any borders, at least not of the political kind. We are a sort of watchdog agency, looking for advancements that come with a particular set of risks. But enough of our group. Deepan, we are aware of your work and the purpose of this trip. I've been sent to convince you not to announce your discovery. So, please do not continue pretending that you know nothing of what I am referring to.
Deepan remained silent for several moments, considering how to respond, then angrily repeated,
I am very tired of this, but I'll ask you again, who are you? Has the European Institute been spying on me? Are you their agent? Tell me now, or I'll accuse you of espionage and turn you in when the plane lands in Delhi. The government does not take very kindly to foreigners poking around in its business, especially now.
Deepan defiantly sat up and crossed his arms over his heaving chest.
Well, at last we're getting someplace.
The man casually leaned forward and pulled an ancient-looking leather attaché case out from under the seat in front of him. Deepan hadn't noticed it when the man had first sat down. The old European lowered the tray table, then placed the case on it, the opening facing toward him, fumbled for a key he had attached to a gold chain, inserted the key in the lock, and opened the case. He reached inside, pulled out a well-worn manila folder, looked at Deepan for a second, hesitated, then handed it over.
Look inside, Deepan, the man sternly suggested.
Deepan reluctantly opened the folder, then found himself staring at a copy of his patent application.
How did you obtain this?
Deepan almost yelled. He instinctively tried to reach up and touch the call button above the seat, but with surprising speed the old man leaned over and grabbed his arm, forcing Deepan's hand back to the armrest.
You must listen to me before you decide to turn me in. You must understand. Not all discoveries are meant to be revealed in the age they are made.
What do you mean?
Deepan tried to object, but the old man talked over him.
Now and then in every generation, there is a brilliant individual such as yourself who will make a vast leap in understanding that would have otherwise taken generations to attain. In the heat of discovery, you are convinced that the rest of the world must be told. But, from the perspective of a much longer-term view, our view, the timing may be premature. The world may need to wait, to catch up, to ease into the new reality that your discovery will surely create. Dropping such a thing on an unprepared culture doesn't work. We learned that over 100 years ago, and that is why we created the group. I can assure you that there are those of us in the organization who have faced a moment like you are facing now. And many of us have succumbed to the temptation. The 20th century was a bad century that way. However, it could have been worse. ZPE could have been released on the world instead of Fission. The group just managed to delay the former, but you are the proof that the concept keeps re-emerging.
But how can that be?
Deepan began.
There were no successful attempts in the 20th century to make zero-point energy useful. In fact, no one could agree that the stuff existed.
He trailed off, mumbling almost to himself.
But then, I suppose that the Casimir effect does. But even then, no one proved that there was a way ZPE could be used. There wasn't even agreement back then on how much energy there was in the zero-point field of a vacuum. At least as far as I know.
As far as you know, the man repeated. In reality, it is as far as we allowed anyone to find out. There were some promising theories and experiments that caught our attention. But we ensured that they went nowhere. You weren't the first to come up with that solution, Deepan, and probably will not be the last.
Deepan stared at the man in disbelief.
But why would you do this, when India and the world are desperate for clean, cheap energy?
You've already mentioned it, and it's implied in the power conversion formulas in your patent.
The man gestured to the open file folder on Deepan's lap.
A small volume of vacuum contains almost an infinite amount of power.
He gave Deepan a wan smile.
My colleagues and I don't want to see the oceans of the world accidentally boiled away or its cities intentionally incinerated. We are quite determined not to repeat our mistakes of the last century.
Deepan's expression hardened.
You know, I've put more than 20 years into this, and I'm not about to let some weird fanatical stop me because he's afraid that there is the infinitesimal chance that something could go wrong, or that the technology could get applied in a destructive way. If we had used that principle to direct our discoveries, we wouldn't even have invented fire yet. It would have been considered too dangerous. And besides, be realistic. How are you going to stop me? We were on a plane full of many people.
For insurance, Deepan added, hoping that the man would not see through him.
And I am being met in Delhi. If I don't show up, there'll be questions asked.
Our methods have never been so crude. However, I can assure you that if you tried to register your patent, you will find that no one will be able to reproduce your work. Your grants will dry up, your reputation will be questioned, and your career will be at an end.
Impossible. You do not have the power to do that.
Deepan tried to insist, but he felt a sudden lack of confidence.
Let us suppose that we both agree that ZPE is real, and once the theory is known, harnessing it is so simple that anyone could do it. So I simply don't understand how you could stop me or its spread.
However simple the process may be, it is still sensitive to, let us call it, environmental factors, which need to be precisely controlled. These factors can easily be interfered with in any attempt to reproduce your results, so I can guarantee that anyone who tries will fail. People will eventually decide that you have not found the holy grail of energy, and your ideas will be dismissed. We've done this many times before, so the effort needed on our part will be minimal.
At that moment, Deepan felt the plane begin to descend. Confused, he checked his watch and realized that there should have been 90 minutes left in the flight. And as he was trying to figure out what was wrong, the intercom suddenly cracked to life.
Hello, this is your captain speaking. I'm sorry to inform you that we're being diverted to Indore to allow several severe thunderstorms over the Delhi area to clear. We anticipate that the layover will only be 2 hours, so we are asking you to stay in the departure area once we land. Those passengers who have connections, please let our cabin crew know so they can help you rearrange your travel plans.
Well, the old man continued, I won't be accompanying you all the way to Delhi. I've completed my mission, so it has been arranged for me to depart.
The white-haired man casually mentioned, as if he were getting off at a planned stop. Deepan was going to point out that the plane was being delayed by bad weather, not landing to let him off, when the white-haired man seemed to sense what he was going to say.
Influencing chaotic systems like weather, That was one from about 50 years ago. Of course, we couldn't let that technique find its way into the world. Yet, sometimes, it can prove quite useful to our work.
Deepan looked incredulously at the man as he spoke.
Do you honestly think that we simply threw all those ideas into some kind of vault and locked them away? Oh no, quite the opposite. Within the group, they are nurtured and refined until their proper time comes to be released. You have a choice, Deepan. The group is always looking for new talent. If you choose not to go ahead with your patent, you would find the work very interesting. A lot of travel at times. You would even be allowed to continue your research. Think about it.
The man suddenly grabbed the file back from Deepan's lap, put it back in his case and locked it, slid it under his feet, then fastened his seatbelt. He didn't say anything during the rough approach and landing, which had Deepan so anxious that he couldn't think of anything other than surviving the flight. To Deepan's relief, the plane finally taxied to the gate and stopped. The cabin immediately erupted in activity as all the passengers began to release their seatbelts and stand in the aisle, vying to be the first out when the door opened. The old European got up before Deepan and said in a pleasant tone,
"Think about our offer, Deepan. Here's my card."
He thrust a plain white card toward Deepan. Hesitantly, Deepan took it, turning it over several times. The card had only two words printed in black Roman letters. The group.
"Tell me this is a bad joke. How am I supposed to contact you with that?"
Deepan angrily shot back, adding,
"Not that I ever will."
"There's no need to try and contact us. Just keep that card, and we'll know what you've decided and when."
Deepan looked at him questioningly, but the line in the aisle began to move, pushing the old man along with them. Deepan tried to get up to follow him, but couldn't. He had forgotten to undo his seatbelt. By the time he had fumbled his way out of it, the old European had been swept down the aisle and out of the plane. Deepan groaned with frustration and looked to the back of the cabin, hoping there was a break in the line of exiting passengers that would allow him to cut in, but there wasn't. He sat back down to wait his turn. Then looking over to the empty seat that the man had occupied, Deepan spotted a piece of neatly folded paper that the man had apparently dropped. He picked it up and anxiously unfolded it, finding the paper was so old that it almost crumbled in his hands. On one side, there were a few lines written in an ornate cursive style which read,
"By the way, Deepan, neutrinos do travel faster than light. Think about the implications if we had let that one get out. Can you imagine? Things finishing before they even got started. Causality would be a complete mess. Not to mention the chaos of meddling time travelers. Good thing there's only a few of us. Warm regards, A.E. P.S. Hope you're interested."
And before Deepan could read it again, the note crumbled to dust in his hands. Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 51, Somewhere, Sometime, Quantum Turbulence. We hope you enjoyed this month's story, and if you did, please tell your friends about us. We'd love to hear from you, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. The opening and closing theme is Podsafe Music by David H. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative License, which means that you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't change anything.